Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine conflict. The headline is surprising. Anti-Putin Russians say they launched a cross-border attack from Ukraine. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft writing about this event because it is not only extremely unusual and unpredictable, but at the same time, it suggests the possibility of a much larger conflict than even the Ukraine war, which has drawn in NATO, the EU, the whole planet after the G7 meeting. But now, what appears to be Russians who are anti-Putin with weapons crossing into Russia from Ukraine. It can get worse, but that's bad enough. Anatole, a very good day to you. Thank you very much. Did this surprise you of the firefighting and the capture of American equipment? This is all unpredicted as of 48 hours ago. Good evening to you.
Hello, John. It didn't totally surprise me because there was a previous raid into a neighboring Russian province in March by the same people, but on a smaller scale. And, you know, there have been drones fired from Ukraine into Russia. It's certainly, striking that the Ukrainians have done this. I think perhaps the most surprising thing was that if, you know, Biden administration officials are to be believed, the Ukrainians did this because, I mean, it's perfectly obvious. And in fact, the leaders of these groups have said themselves even if most or at least some of them are actually Russians, of course, this attack couldn't possibly have taken place without the full support and encouragement of the Ukrainian authorities. Well, now, you know, the Biden administration has repeatedly told the Ukrainian government that they should not attack into Russia, and that certainly they should not attack into Russia using American equipment, because of the risk, of course, that, you know, Russia will then say that its own territory is now under attack and it has the right to retaliate in various ways that it hasn't done so far. But it seems that the Ukrainians just decided to disregard American advice or appeals. As, by the way, they've also done, and this has also now been admitted by Ukrainian officials in private, you know, with a series of assassinations and assassination attempts in Russia, which the CIA last year, actually rather unusually, came out and in a leak, but it was obviously an officially sanctioned leak, said that they disapproved of this and that they didn't want the Ukrainians to carry out such attacks, but the Ukrainians have carried on regardless. I mean, one understands very well why the Ukrainians are doing this. I mean, both, you know, emotionally, because after all, their country has been invaded and massively bombarded and so on. And when it comes to the cross-border raid, there's a clear military rationale because they, by attacking Russian territory, they want to draw off Russian forces out of Ukraine to defend Russia before Ukraine begins its long-promised offensive. But what we have to wait and see now is what the Russians will do in response.
Yes, I'm keen on your thoughts about how Russia sees this story, because suddenly the people, the civilians of Russia, are at risk, as they have not, to this point in the war, been identified as targets for Ukrainian activity, as the Ukrainian civilians were targets for the Russian activity. Now, Russia is keenest on its barrier, or its fortress. It's over the centuries. That's everything. And violation of Russian territory requires something extraordinary. Is that correct, reading history? It's not simply plug the hole in the wall. It's retaliate.
Well, I would imagine so, although, you know, quite how is not clear unless they, you know, step up their attempts to assassinate Ukrainian officials. But one can imagine the problem is, you see, that the Russians are now absolutely convinced, you know, American denials notwithstanding, that America is behind these attacks on Russian territory. Which I don't think is true, by the way, but then again, you know, America has not been able to stop the Ukrainians. So the permanent risk is that Russia will, you know, extend its attacks in some form to Western targets. For example, the sabotage of Western infrastructure. And Russians would see this also as legitimate retaliation against the blowing up of Nord Stream, which they are convinced was the work of the Americans. So I think we are, you know, entering, shall we say, an even more dangerous period in this war, because of course the Biden administration and the great majority of European NATO governments have said throughout that they are determined not to be drawn into a direct war with Russia, because, of course, that could escalate so easily, I mean, even perhaps probably towards nuclear war. But I think as these raids into Belgorod and as these assassinations demonstrate, the problem for American policy is that America does not, in fact, control the Ukrainians. It arms the Ukrainians, it supports the Ukrainians, but it can't actually dictate what they do and do not do. So there is an element of, you know, that old phrase, wag the dog here.
Russia has its own apparent uncontrollable force. That would be the Wagner Group, especially the man who speaks for the Wagner Group, said to be the head, the 61-year-old Yevgeny Prigozhin, who's on the air again within these last hours. The Telegraph in London has a video up of Prigozhin in full body armor, marching around what he says is Bakhmut, high-fiving with his soldiers, his Wagner Group, announcing, we're leaving, which he keeps announcing over several days, we're leaving, the soldiers are going to take over. But at the same time, he's made remarks in these last days that are not only apparently disloyal, but extremely aggressive towards the Russian military and Shoigu, the Russian defense minister. How do you read Prigozhin right now? Is he just a personality on air, or does he speak for a sizable part of the Russian population that we're not going hard enough, that we're keeping the gloves on and with NATO?
Well, the most interesting thing about Prigozhin's latest statements is that, you know, he's been attacking the defense minister Shoigu and the Russian high command for incompetence and corruption for many months now. And, I mean, that does resonate with a great many Russians, partly because it's entirely true. But the really interesting thing about his latest remarks is that he's extended his attacks to the government as a whole and to the Russian elites, you know, attacking the Russian elites in general for corruption and lack of patriotism and, you know, decadence. Actually, as good as saying that the entire war was a terrible mistake. And, you know, he even said that, you know, we said we were going to demilitarize Ukraine and we've turned Ukraine into a military great power. You know, we said we were going to denazify Ukraine and now we have a, you know, an ultra-nationalist Ukraine. And he doesn't attack Putin by name, but he comes pretty close to that. And now, of course, we cannot say for sure why he's doing this, but it does look very much as if he is trying to become a major political figure, playing on some of the same themes, actually, as, you know, Alexei Navalny, the opposition figure who's now in jail, who really ran above all against regime and elite corruption in Russia. And I think Prigozhin is trying to appeal to the same constituency or the same, you know, set of public anger But he's doing so now from the nationalist right. He's doing so as a hero of the Ukraine war. Now, that, I think, is a very, very great danger to the Putin regime, although it's not clear quite why Prigozhin is doing this, but it may be that he feels that, you know, if by any chance Putin does not run in next spring's Russian presidential elections, then, you know, if Putin were to hand over to somebody like Shoigu, or one of his close allies, the intelligence chief Patrushev, then Shoigu would be in mortal danger. And I mean mortal danger, you know, given what happens to, opponents of the regime in Russia. And so it could be that this is a form of preemptive strike, saying, look, you know, Mr. Putin, you need me. I can do you a tremendous amount of damage, and I must be centrally included in your future plans.
The two instances that come to mind of a change of regime in Russia is the fall of the Tsar, and Kerensky, a military man, took command until the revolution, and then the death of Stalin, Beria, the state security chief, and Khrushchev representing, I guess, the army veterans. The change is always towards the right, the nationalists. Is that your point here, that the nationalists have experience in taking over the reins of government?
Well, partly, but, you know, above all, the nationalists have armed men behind them. You know, Prigozhin has a private army, and a very formidable one, and also, I think, a lot of support from what I've heard among Russian junior officers in the rank and file, who also certainly do not admire their own high command, given, you know, the disasters that it's led them into. So that's one reason they're powerful. But also, you see, because they have supported the war and fought in the war, Putin cannot label them traitors to Russia or pro-Americans. It's much more difficult for the regime, you know, to crack down on them, because it, you know, it has relied on them, it's encouraged them. So this is, these people are in a much, much stronger position. The question, of course, is whether there is a more or less orderly transition, I mean, which would undoubtedly involve, you know, and people being jailed or possibly even executed, but still, like the transition from Stalin to Khrushchev, or in a way, or, you know, a handover by agreement, or an organized handover like Yeltsin to Putin in 1999, or, I mean, in the middle of a war in which, as in the First World War, Russia has suffered massive losses and failures, could this be more like 1917 and, you know, the an attempt to change the regime, in fact, or to change the top of the regime, leads to a widespread collapse of the state? And, of course, this is also what happened to a considerable degree when the Soviet Union fell. The Soviet Union disintegrated, and the Russian part of it was also, you know, radically weakened. So I think we're heading into some very interesting and uncertain territory.
I'm speaking with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft about the unpredictable nature of a conflict that is right now on the eve of what we're told to be a major counteroffensive by the Ukrainians. In these last hours, I've attended as best I can a webinar at the Quincy Institute, and when we come back, what I learned from Anatole and his colleagues about where we are in the Ukraine conflict. This is John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.